This podcast is a member of the New York City Podcast Network at nycpodcastnetwork.com. Visit us to listen to over 250 amazing podcasts just like this one.
Japanese street style is some of the cutest and trendiest clothing in the world. Introducing Cherry Goddess Women's Clothing and Accessories, the hottest original and cute clothing company. We offer tops, clothes, accessories, shoes, dresses and skirts, and comfortable homeware that we guarantee you will love. Cherry Goddess Women's Clothing, super cute Japanese style clothing.
This is Black Wall Street Chronicles, and we're back at it again. Thank you for checking out my podcast. Today on this episode, we are going to talk about the water crisis in Mexico and the water crisis in South Africa. This is part two of the water crisis series that I've been starting. But before I get into the episode, there's a song I'd like you to listen to from an artist by the name of Nick Arrow. The call song is called Breakdance. It is on the New York City Podcast Safe Directory Network. Thank you, and I'll get back to you after the song.
Don't tell me to come down, down, down. Don't tell me to come down, down, down. Cause I'll never come down, down, down. Don't tell me to come down, down, down. Don't tell me to come down, down, down. I won't
This is Black Wall Street Chronicles. We're back at it again. Thank you for listening to the song from Nick Arrow called Breakdance from the podcast New York City Podcast Safe Directory. You can listen to the song on iTunes or Spotify. Now, let's get into the episode. The first thing I'm going to talk about is South Africa. How South Africa may be the first country in the whole world that will completely run out of water. I'm reading this article from National Geographic. It's called Day Zero, What's Next? Cape Town, South Africa, have dodged the Day Zero bullet. But all across South Africa, drought and rising demand is escalating a national water crisis. The article is by John Heggie. (Clears throat) As the pellets of rain pound into dry earth of the Eastern Cape this January, a man launched himself into a puddle of water created by a broken drain. This spontaneous celebration seems symbolic of South Africa's precarious but hopeful relationship with water. The country is desperately dry, making any precipitation extremely precious, but there are a few long-term solutions to help ease the ongoing water problem. In 2018, Cape Town's Day Zero became the focus for South America's water crisis. But while its circumstances were certainly unique, the causes of the water problems were not. High demand and inadequate supply. As such, Cape Town's situation is a warning for a whole country. South Africa relies on its rainwater, levels of which are unpredictable, unevenly distributed and decreasing as a result of global warming. In October 2019, dams were at 10 to 60% below 2018 levels. As of January 2020, some rain has fallen and some reservoirs are filling again, but the forecast is of more dry weather, and that means regions and cities across South Africa can soon be facing their own day zero. For some has already arrived. KwaZulu-Natal provinces is no stranger to drought. In 2019, rural communities of South Durban had to survive weeks without municipal water, depending instead on relatable tanker trucks. By November, protracted drought saw the Providence South Coast suffering severe shortages as the water sources dried up. There were calls for the town of Harding to be declared a disaster area and urging proposals for a bulk pipeline to secure its water supply, an expensive and complicated undertaking in a country where similar bills suffer delays, cancellations, and poor workmanship. Meanwhile, Durban is losing around 35% of its municipal supply to death and illegal connections, undermining the income needed to fund such vital improvements. Right now, the rains are falling, but unless supply improves and demand falls, towns across KwaZulu-Natal South Coast District face their own looming day zero. It is a familiar story across South Africa. Gauteng Province draws its water from the integrated Vaal River system. That includes a huge water transfer via the Lake Sogo Highlands Water Project. Last October, Johannesburg residents were hit with the precautionary water restrictions when the Vaal Dam levels dropped to 53% and planned maintenance stopped lesser water transfers for 2 months. To many, this highlighted the fragility of the water supply. Gauteng's population is increasing rapidly, with the domestic supply the fastest growing sector, but its available water won't increase until the Pollard Dam is completed in 2026. To avoid the water crisis, Gauteng must reduce water in order to deal with population growth, cutting it by 3% person per year. Last October, heat waves saw daily consumption rise by 264 million gallons. 1,000 October heat waves saw daily consumption rise by 264 million gallons, 1,000 million liters, and compounded by infrastructure problems. Suburban faucets ran dry in the capital. With the certainty of 6 years of good rains, Johannesburg and Pretoria need to follow Cape Town's lead and actively cut their water use. In Eastern Cape, a crippling drought coupled with the inadequate contingency plans left thousands without water last year. In the town of Abelaide, the dam dropped to 1% of capacity, and even though the authorities could not act because they lacked funds, with no proper rain for at least 5 months. October saw councils of 5 municipalities declared drought disasters were cause for national water status, with many rivers and springs already dried up.
Even boreholes proved ineffective as groundwater became scarce because of the lack of rainfall to recharge it. The water recently released from a dam on the Coosville River is providing some respite for towns like Butterworth, with supplies tinkered out to surrounding communities. But the region is desperate for funds to be found for more substantial solutions to their ongoing water worries. Northern Cape's reliance on rain-fed agriculture has seen 7 years of serious drought devastate its agricultural sector. Abnormal hot weather and below-average rainfall has scorched grazing lands and dried up watering holes, with wholesale livestock deaths and crop failures, bringing financial ruin to farmers and spike in food prices. It is estimated that at least $40 million is needed to alleviate the drought's effects and secure more than 60,000 jobs depending on agriculture. The drought has also wiped out more than two-thirds of the province game, and there is a threat of total water supply failure from certain towns. Kimberley cut its water supplies at night to reduce consumption. In January, the rain began falling again, but there is still a need for water-saving measures and more efficient methods of agriculture. From installing drip irrigation systems to planting crops that can survive the even harsher droughts that future climate change could bring. For Cape Town itself, day zero hasn't disappeared. It's really been delayed, with catastrophic shortages that nearly turned off its faucets was narrowly averted. Capetonians continue to survive on much less than they were used to. Just over 27 gallons, 105 liters per person per day. These stringent restrictions, combined with new dam projects and desalinization schemes, are keeping Cape Town sated, if not exactly splashing through the summer. Its dams are currently at around 70% capacity. However, in Free State Providence, in the town of Coorcore, needed 5,000 water tankers to provide immediate relief for its water shortage. While elsewhere in South Africa, the last couple of years has seen water restrictions in Limpopo Province, faucets running dry in Mpumalanga Province, and the acquisition of $20 million to upgrade failing water infrastructure in the Northwest Province. Across South Africa, water stress is a priority problem, but with no single cause, there is no single solution. Each area experiences water issues caused to different degrees by executive use, growing demand, pollution, theft, thirsty plants, inadequate infrastructure, and poor practices. Solving these issues not only requires financial investment, but also a change in attitude. South Africa cannot support the water lifestyle some residents consider to be their right. Food and water consumption is 35% above the global average. The draft National Water and Sanitation Master Plan laid it out clearly. Without a fundamental mind shift in the way that South Africa thinks about water, to accompany or underpin a massive $60 billion investment, the country will run out of water by 2030. It's a sobering message. While for many South Africans, a little rain brings hope, hope alone will not guarantee South Africa's water supply. Yeah, so that's the article for National Geographic that's been written by John Hagee, talking about day zero, the day when South Africa will run out of water. That's very scary, you know? That's very scary that South Africa is running out of water like that. And I hope that the dams that they're building and their limited use of water will replenish their reservoirs and replenish their water supply. Now, I want you to listen to this other song by Nick Arrow. It's called You Got It Like Me, and it's also from the podcast Safe Directory Network. And after listening to the song, I'm going to talk about the water crisis that's happening in Mexico City. Thank you. I'll be back shortly.
This is Black Wall Street Chronicles, and we're back at it again. Thank you for listening to the last song, Nick Arrow, You Got Me. And it's from the New York City Podcast Safe Directory Network. Now, I'm going to talk about the water crisis in Mexico City. In this article by the Pulitzer Center, it's called The Search for Mexico City's Lost Water. And its author is Claire Potter. Mexico City faces a paradoxical water crisis and is running out of water even as floods plague its working class neighborhoods. The water table falls each year, forces wells to plunge ever deeper. The city is sinking its aquifer and its drinks of ancient reserves of groundwater. In the oldest neighborhoods, which has fallen more than 30 feet, blocks of colonial buildings have bent into the waves of the surrealist painting as the ground shifts and sinks. At least 30% of the urban population do not have access to the daily supplies of water in their homes. Meanwhile, rain with nowhere to go floods the streets during summer downpours. Climate change will hasten the crisis. Models suggest increased temperatures and reduced precipitation will shorten the rainy season and increase the risk of a severe drought. Mexico City fills a high altitude valley in the middle of the country. The first settlers thousands of years ago had an abundance of water. Rivers rushed down the surrounding mountains and fed five shallow lakes. The Aztecs built their capital, Tenochtitlan, on the island in the largest lake, Texcoco. Floods threatened the city since its founding, and the Aztecs built a complicated system of dikes and aqueducts to control water.
They learned how to use water to their advantage. With time, they understood how water moved through their enclosed and aerotic basin where no water flowed out, but instead constantly cycled. They grew corn, beans, squash, and rectangular pots interlaced with canals. Boats threaded through the capital and the entire valley, connecting the growing Aztec Empire. The Spanish conquered the Aztecs in 1521 and built their capital over the ruins of Tenochtitlan. I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing that name wrong. But they did not know how to manage a capital city so interwoven with water. Without Aztec engineering, floods of waterborne disease plagued the city at higher rates than before. In a drainage project that spanned centuries, the colonial and then independent Mexican governments broke through the surrounding mountains, opened a water basin, and drained the lakes. By 2023, the city metastasized into a metropolis of over 22 million people. Unregulated construction paved over the drained lakes. All but one of the city's 48 rivers was enclosed in sewage pipes. Today, havens of preserved wetlands and reservoirs hemmed in by ever-encroaching city blocks hit at Mexico City's water-rich past. Massive infrastructure projects replace the natural water cycle with a linear system that extracts water and discards it outside the water basin. Wells pulled from aquifers below the city supply over two-thirds of Mexico City's water. A massive system of pumps, canals, and tunnels working against gravity delivers water from other water basins to supply the rest. Meanwhile, the sinking city crushes its own infrastructure and 40% of its water is lost to leaks. The city barrels to the day zero when water stops flowing. Its exact date is unknown. A drought could trigger a crisis, or Mexico City could make do for years. All it is certain that Mexico City does not drastically change how it manages water, the crisis will come. Mexico City had at once too much and too little water. Mexico City has abundant rainfall in a wet season from May through October, but its drainage system makes the rainfall filled with sewage and industrial waste, so it's too polluted for domestic use. Despite the shortage of potable water, the vast draining system pumps wastewater out of the valley. The system periodically fails during heavy summer storms, leaving low-lying neighborhoods flooded with polluted water. In the last 400 years, the drainage mix system in Mexico has emptied and created aquifers and a massive transfer of water. To the north of the city, Mexico City's untreated wastewater irrigates Mixco Valley, a former desert that now produces alfalfa, corn, and wheat in abundance. The valley's irrigation water is the untreated waste of the capital. Even though it's polluted with lead, arsenic, bacteria, parasites, and grease, and plastic debris, it is a valuable agricultural resource. In 1992, Mexico banned growing plants whose edible parts would be exposed to the polluted water and sold for human consumption. Although enforcement remains imperfect, government shows that using the black water, Mexico calls it, for animal feed does not harm human health. The transfer of water has been so vast and poor long that a new aquifer is forming below the fields in Mexico. The rocks and soil clean the water as it percolates down to the aquifer below. And some scholars say that the Mexico Valley may be the largest natural water filtration plant in the world. A new generation of urban planners, academics, and activists argue that Mexico City needs to rehabilitate its relationship with water to survive. They advocate that green and blue infrastructure, designs that mimic nature rather than fighting it, are the only ways to save Mexico City. The city needs to build a circular system where the water is used, cleaned, and used again. It needs nature to do that. They say green and blue infrastructure projects used to rarely ever receive funding. but a burst of projects in recent years use wetlands, trees, and native plants to rebuild the natural water cycle. We have a wrong-headed relationship with nature. Dr. Fabola Sosa Rodriguez, an environmental scientist at the Universidad Nacional Autónoma de Mexico. For centuries, the city has fought against natural water, when in reality, for water security, we need to nurture water and retain it instead of casting it out. 6 lanes of cars on either side of Acueducto de Piedad. The highway traces where a river once flowed. The Piedad was the first river that Mexico City enclosed because wastewater pollution made it a hazard to public health. The aqueduct is a raised lean apart in an attempt to resurrect the river. Alais Catan, an architect and environmental activist, launched a movement to recover the Piedad River nearly 10 years ago. He dreams of reintegrating the buried rivers into the urban water cycle. Thousands join picnics at the river to persuade the government to rescue the river of sewage flowing below them. The intense public pressure and the police reaction that brought international attention, the government agreed to build a park that resurfaced the water hidden below the highway. Alejandro Avila Martinez, a biologist, designed small wetlands to clean 30,000 liters of sewage, redirected from the enclosed river. But that is merely a fraction of the river's flow. Avila's design displayed how the nature-based treatment could clean black water over the course of 1.6 kilometers. Biodigesters perch over the city, host microorganisms that feed on organic containments. Then the water flows into a bed of aqueducts that draw out the sweet, sick odor of sewage. Gravity pulls the water through a series of small wetlands that grow in rectangular beds on each side of the path. And on the end of the park, the water is supposed to be clear, as it was when the park first opened in 2017. Green infrastructure may be economical, but it does require maintenance. During the pandemic, Alva said, gardeners who tended the wetlands lost their jobs. Their vegetation became so overgrown that the water can no longer flow through the aqueduct, he explained. Although it's not what he envisioned, he is still proud of the aqueduct. He likes designing with nature because it has a surreptitious way of defining human expectations. Without maintenance, the park transforms into a rain garden that grows abundantly in the wet season. Bees gaze among the thick beds of lavender. The scent of the herbs overwhelms the exhaust arriving for the highway below. Alva is excited by the potential wetlands taking over the city's kilometer lines, the bank of grass and vegetation that separate multi-lane highways across the city. With this wetland we have here, if you duplicate it for every chameleon, each black could have his own water treatment plant. My rule is, if I have black water, I have a park. Give me black water and I give you this. No one was interested when Alva built his first wetlands in 1996. But since the aqueduct, he's had a rush of projects. Now that they see it works, everybody wants to do it. Catan launched a picnic at the River Movement early 10 years ago, and all the time it kept to change how the city manages water. He taught us between grand visions for Mexico City's future and pessimism about its capacity to realize them. To him, the aqueduct is an example of Mexico's failure to maintain projects from one administration to the next. But he said, is it indeed progress that Mexico City's government now sees green infrastructure as legitimate enough to fund? He has seen no progress at the scale necessary to address the water crisis. The city needs to restore the whole water basin rather than focus on scattered projects, he argues. He insists that Mexico City needs to abandon cars and divert the millions it spends to highways to green regenerative projects. The solutions are there. The prototypes are there. The case studies are there. And the budgets are there. Everything has been proven, he said. Yet, he watches as the government adds lanes to highways and invests in car infrastructure, even though the majority of the city uses on public transportation. An ecological park twice the size of Manhattan. Nature-based solutions to the water crisis are emerging throughout Mexico City. Artificial wetlands cover a former landfill in Cuitláhuac, a neighborhood often desperate for water. In one of its largest installations yet, artificial wetlands clean water in the Aragon forest in the west of the city. More ambitious projects are in the early stages. For example, officials announced in August that a long-awaited $200 million USD project at 513 Heartache Lake, Lake Tuzico, is moving forward. The lake itself under threat by illegal settlements built on piles of construction waste dumped in the lake would become a source of water. The project will shift the city's thirsty and impoverished western neighborhoods towards water reuse, but its construction remains years away. The Texcoco Ecological Park is the most ambitious environmental project under construction in Mexico City. The park will combine environmental preservation with public recreation, featuring wetlands, restored lakes, hiking trails, and sports fields. At nearly twice the size of Manhattan, it will be one of the largest urban parks in the world. During former President Felipe Calderón's tenure from 2006 to 2012, Elvira developed plans to restore the 35,000-acre seasonally dry lake bed of Lake Texcoco. He envisioned how artificial wetlands are restored, man-made lakes could turn back the clock and recover some of Mexico City's lost water. Texcoco Ecological Park will help alleviate flooding, capture water, and moderate temperatures. At first, El Cid Vera struggled to cross the Rubicon from idea to project. The land sits next to Mexico City's international airport, and the next president, Enrique Peña Nieto, decided to use the open space to build a new and expanded airport. But building an airport on a wet, unstable soil of seasonal wetlands proved both costly and difficult. Our current president, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, nixed Nieto's airport when Obrador found an old copy of Elvira's plans for an ecological park. He called them in for a meeting. Nearly 20 years after his first plans for Texcoco, Elvira found himself managing the most ambitious green infrastructure project in Mexico City's history since the Spanish conquest. The lake bed is one of the last expenses of undeveloped land in Mexico City. Most open land, even if it has legal protections, have been paid over Mexico City largely because of a decade-long pattern of unplanned developments. The city's population spiked from 3 million in 1950 to over 22 million today. The lake bed is one of the last expanses of undeveloped land in Mexico City. Most open land, even if it has legal protections, have been paid over in Mexico City largely because of the decades-long pattern of unplanned developments. The city's population spiked from 3 million to 1950 to over 22 million today. The lake bed remains open only because of the floods and unstable soil have made the construction possible. In the popular imagination, the remnant of Lake Texcoco is a saltline wasteland where dust swarms swirl and only desert salt grass and ever-hardy gray-green tamarisk trees grow, driving over the park's dirt roads. You see a flat expanse of red, dusty soil specked with low-lying green shrubs and trees. A few miles inside the park's gate, an unnaturally regular lake with a 12-kilometer perimeter interrupts the arid landscape. Constructed in the 1970s, Nabo Carrillo was an early successful attempt at ecological restoration. Enrique Pennant, an engineer who recently helped repair Nabo Carrillo's banks, relished in explaining every detail of his engineering. Pipes flow from a water treatment plant filled it with semi-treated wastewater when it seeps through the subsoil, which naturally cleans contaminants. He then, a series of pumps, extract the water for reuse and poor neighborhood on a mountain overlooking the lake. Pinnock's only regret was that the few cities had space for massive holding ponds that use the soil to clean and reuse water. For now, the Texarkoko Ecological Park is closed off to the public. Armed guards stood at the gates when I visited the summer of 2022. Misinformation about the project is widespread, and everyone from Uber driver to an acquaintance from an art class speculated that the park was behind schedule and failing to live the government's ambitious promises and a viable restoration. But it would say the progress is well underway, and that contrary to popular belief, the lake bed of Texarkoko is not a wasteland. While the soil's levels of soluble salts and sodium exudes many plants, his team has found 200 individual plant species that have built a greenhouse within the park to nurture and reproduce the native species. With the restoration at a large scale, the remnants of Lake Texarkoko can become an ecological haven for providing recreation, habitat for a diverse range of animals and plants, and much-needed water storage and green infrastructure to the crowded city surrounding it on every side. Ishirisa argues that the project is worth every penny. The city in the valley of Mexico that we can imagine in 30 or 50 and 100 years are radically different and economically more valuable and resilient if we recover our ecosystems and our relationship to water, he said. The completed park will quell dust storms, lower urban temperatures, and offer more storage water during the rainy season. Even as a project as the Texarkoko Ecological Park cannot solve the city's crisis, it can only help. But Vieira hopes that it will spark a much broader commitment to restoring the land. Perhaps he hopes it will even help the city return to a culture of water that predates Mexico City's war with its most important resource. Looking for a solution is big as the problem. Building smaller, localized projects in Mexico City can take years because of political setbacks. Often when administrators change, the new party in power stymies the last party's projects to undermine their opponent's legacy, explained by a political scientist on the Black Realm. However, many times, there is not enough money to see the projects through. Loretta Castro Regalua, a landscape architect, Emmanuel Pello Cohen, an economist with experience in urban planning, saw potential in a 10-acre garbage dump in a crime neighborhood of Isapapapa. Water naturally pooled in the land with a crack in the soil that had filtered down the starved aquifer below. Castro and her team wanted to advance natural infiltration. They developed designs for a public park that doubled as infrastructure. It would have volcanic stone terraces, rainwater service, public toilets, artificial wetlands, in a small sewage treatment plant. They first presented a proposal for a park called Culebrador to municipal government in 2013, but it faced a constant battle as it tried to muster the political will to build it. One mayor finally picked up the project, only for construction to stall after the first phase. It's an endurance race. It happens with every project. We need to be there all the time, Castro says. Determined to galvanize support for Culebrador, Castro and Pelero entered the project for the Holoclima Awards, an international competition for sustainable architecture. To their shock and delight, it won twice. First, the Latin American Gold in 2017, and then the Global Gold in 2018. The publicity around the prize motivated the government to finish the project, Castro said. But after a few months of work, a new mayor took office and stopped the project. After a lengthy review, construction resumed. Culebrador opened in 2021, nearly 10 years after its first proposal. Yet Castro and Perlo lost control of the project during its construction. The government had to reduce the scope of the project as it exceeded their initial budget. The wetlands, the water treatment, and rainwater toilets were never built, but Perlo and Castro are glad that the water filtration system that Culebrador is popular with people who live in the neighborhood. Despite the frustrations of Culebrador, Castro, Perlo embarked on building another hydraulic park in Escapé, a water-starved neighborhood perched on a mountain periphery of Mexico City. Some people may think that we are very incrementalist and that we need a drastic change, Perlo said. But he believes in the potential of small projects tailored to particular neighborhoods and environments, especially if they're going to form a network across the city. The alternative, if he argues, would be wait till a catastrophic flood or drought to force the city to act. There are also signs of hope. When Perlo and Castro first proposed Culebrador 10 years ago, nature-based infrastructure projects were seen as hippie pipe dreams that could never deliver the results of traditional gray infrastructure projects. But today, the city's government is developing a green infrastructure plan where there are established mechanisms to fund nature-based solutions, and while many sustainable solutions meet setbacks, household rainwater harvesting system has explored in popularity. Enrique Lomelis saw an opportunity in the vast quantities of reused rain that falls on Mexico City each year during the wet season. In all, nearly twice as much rain falls in Mexico City as London. The Rhode Island School of Design graduated work with other students to develop a small, durable rainwater harvesting system that connects and cleans the water that pounds on Mexico City's rooftops in the rainy season. They provide about 6 months of water for family and reduce flooding. Nominus co-founded Isla Urbana, a nonprofit, installs the system. In 2009 so far, it has installed 30,000 in Mexico. Other organizations have mimicked the technology. Lomelis discovered that the government was eager to buy and subsidize rainwater harvesting systems. In the impoverished urban sprawl of Mexico City, running water is especially rare in the neighborhoods that was built up informally without central planning and regulation. Infrastructure has yet to catch up with development. Municipal governments spend thousands on pipers or water trucks that go into neighborhoods without running water and face backlash from communities frustrated by inconsistent and insufficient deliveries, he explained. Rainwater harvesting systems give the government a way to address the problem, even if it fails to deliver regular running water. Over time, Lomelis learned just how useful Issa Urbana's product would be for politicians. Water is a stressed resource in much of Mexico. When the drought hits, severe water shortages are not far behind. In 2021, the northern industrial city of Monterrey ran out of water, and when the crisis hit, municipal governments called Issa Urbana with urgent orders, Lomelis said. These are complex crises. They actually don't have quick fixes, he says. And so whatever they want to do, whenever they need to fix to do things, they can't do that quickly. And implementing these rainwater harvesting programs allow them to do something that shows that they are doing something. It works, it's very fast, it's visible, and so it buys them a little time. Long-term solutions to the water crisis in Mexico City will cost millions, take years. Each artificial wetland, rain garden, and hydraulic park is a step forward. But by protecting the city against day zero will require projects large enough to shift the city away from a linear water system and towards a circular model of reuse. While Mexico City operates one of the most expensive water systems in the world, finding the money to transform it is a near paralyzing challenge. For many, solutions feel out of reach so long as the city fails to see itself in the web of nature. Cannon insists on using the word canoinsa, or water basin, to shape his listeners' identities around the natural limits of their water supply. For some, that philosophy is beginning to take hold. Valeria Hernandez, an environmentalist and mother, sees a growing environmental consciousness in her neighborhood. She lived in Ixumamico, a neighborhood that is home to both crowded urban blocks and is the most important wetlands remaining in New York City. There, indigenous communities whose roots predate the Spanish conquest still nurture traditional attitudes towards water. We are part of nature, part of the same ecosystem, and we have to work for nature because we are a part of her. Without her, we don't live, Hernandez said. On a hot July day, she and other five volunteers planted native plants in a small park under threat of development. They want to save the land to be a seed bank and public space. When Hernandez, now 32, was a child, she asked her grandmother to set aside the canals and wetlands lost to urban development. She ached for water she never knew. She asked why so much was lost, and the grandmother told her that she didn't know. Her work left her no time to pay attention. Hernandez does not want to tell the same story to her daughter.